Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 525, Dr. Sleep.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
This is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, wherever you get your podcasts, except Google Podcasts, apparently.
We are now, right?
No, I can't figure out how to do it.
Okay.
I looked up the rules
and
like how to do it. Sweet baby Jesus. It's like, make sure your flux drive doesn't have robot.txt blocking your left kidney. And I'm just like, what the hell is this saying?
Spreaker's real.
Yeah.
I thought we were making that up.
No, that's a real thing.
Oh, my God.
If we were making that up, we'd have TM'd it.
That's true, yeah.
But, yeah, like the instructions for how to get onto Google Podcasts, like,
okay.
I don't even understand the words
they're
saying.
So I should look
saying.
At it. Yeah.
Okay. Like,
Was Tom's roundabout way of saying, hey, Kevin, take
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I hadn't heard him ask for help yet, so
yeah.
I didn't understand
like,
that.
Behind the scenes, like, I'm the one that has gone through and, like, pushed it out, except for Apple Podcasts.
Yeah,
like I put it on the other platforms. I submitted us to Pandora yesterday.
Oh, nice.
But like the Google one, I'm like,
I got nothing.
But I'm the one that like I got us on Blueberry and iHeart and TuneIn and all that stuff.
Sweet.
But we've been on those for years, you know.
Right.
But I just figured out yesterday that Google Play and Google Podcasts are not the same thing. Like, when I did Google Play, Google Podcasts
didn't exist.
Right. And so when they started saying Google Podcasts, I thought...
You presumed it carried over.
I thought they were rebranding what was already there.
Sure,
and so I didn't think it was a whole other thing. And also, thanks for submitting your show to our other platform, but go F yourself.
Right.
So, should have known.
Yeah.
Should have known. So, it was... I was just like, what the huh? So
well, before you turn into Dr. Sleep, let's talk about this movie.
Yes.
So what is everybody's relationship with the book first?
I've read both.
Okay.
I read The Shining when I was like a teenager.
Okay.
And then I actually just reread The Shining and then rolled right into Dr. Sleep.
Okay.
So
how do they work together? Like when you roll them together?
They're okay. I mean, you know, like I just wanted The Shining to be kind of top of mind. And
sure.
Because I hadn't read it in 30 years. And so I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Because there were some elements that I think if I hadn't just read The Shining, I would have thought he was kind of retconning some things.
Yep.
He was not.
Right.
That he played fair and square.
He being Stephen King or he being Mike Flanagan?
He being Stephen King.
Okay.
And I have not watched The Shining recently.
Okay.
And I think that there's a pretty significant plot point that they've removed from the movie.
Oh. From the book?
From the book that's not in the movie because I don't think it gets addressed in the film
No Hedge Maze.
Memory serves.
Gotcha. Okay. And yeah, I never.
So we actually just did a Patreon episode on The Shining that's coming.
So that will be, by the time you hear this, yeah, it should be up. So Patreon listeners will have just gotten that refresher of, right, Stanley Kubrick's 1980 The Shining. Yeah, so we recently just rewatched the movie. I, of course, watched it, you know, several times. I never read the book, but I did read Dr. Sleep. So, okay, I was excited to see how the movie.
This is very interesting. So yeah. I've read the book, read The Shining, but not Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, so we have a good mixture.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so it's no secret that Kubrick, there's a reason it's not called Stephen King's The Shining.
Right.
There's a reason it's called Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. I was wondering how that was going to factor into this.
I think they did a really good job of threading the needle,
yeah,
of being a sequel to both without, yeah, ever disavowing either.
Yeah. I thought it was masterful the, yeah, way that they made a sequel to the book and the movie, and
almost a reboot of the original movie. It's almost like this weird.
I wouldn't say a reboot because
it's this very strange, and not strange in a bad way, but like you said, a masterful way to tie in,
yeah,
the Shining movie, and Dr. Sleep, and make them all work together, yeah, in sequence, which I didn't think was even going to be possible.
Right.
They made the right choices.
Because it's so, like, because the book and the original book and movie are so different.
We always talk about how when you adapt a book, I mean, this, you know, a lot of times book readers aren't happy with the movie, you know, and people that have not read the book, they're happy with it because they don't know the changes or whatnot. It's very hard to please all groups, but I have a feeling, and I mean, as a book reader of Dr. Sleep, I am very happy with what they did, but also as book readers of The Shining, even though I haven't read it, I know about the differences,
right,
and I'm amazed at how they included some things from that book that didn't happen in the movie, and then some of the movie things. I mean, we'll go through them and talk about the changes as we go, but I was blown away by how well they handled,
yeah,
it. It's like they made choices. They had to make choices of which ones to be truthful to,
right,
and I feel like all the ones that they made throughout the movie were the right ones, like,
yes,
the ones that I agreed with.
Yeah.
I never went like, oh, they should have. There's only one thing at the end that we'll get into that I didn't like, but overall, the way the movie flowed was very
good. And I will say it's very faithful to the book right up until it's not.
Yeah.
But then it's faithful to the other book.
But I thought that it was...
Our movie. Because in the book, the Overlook, yeah, doesn't exist.
Well, what I'm saying is like...
Right.
When we'll get
anything
there.
At
we'll
the Overlook there. Is can't be faithful to the book,
right?
But it can be, but it can be faithful to the Shining book.
No.
Yes.
Well, in a retconned way,
right? Yeah. Right.
Yes, but I just mean like people have read this is an adaptation of Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure,
so
I'm saying
is that
yes.
So when you get to the Overlook, it's like right there. You
right.
can't do that. But that's where, hey, now you're a sequel to the movie,
right?
So it's interesting.
But I liked the changes. I liked the third act of this movie,
yeah,
better than I liked,
yeah,
the third act of the book.
Sure.
Interesting.
And I didn't dislike the book, but I really thought that this was an improvement.
Yeah.
This ending was an improvement over the book.
And you could only do it because of being a sequel to the movie.
Yeah.
He can't go to the Overlook in his book. That would,
right,
be ridiculous. I mean,
and they kind of find a way around that in the book.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah.
Because it's kind of like
they're there, but
the Overlook
can't
is kind of a ghost in,
yeah,
and of itself that,
right,
they end up in for a bit.
Yeah, they're, yeah.
But exactly. You certainly don't spend as much time in, yeah, in the Overlook itself
as opposed to the
as you do
the
in
movie.
The, in,
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, we should just mention, and we go into this in depth, the whole movie of The Shining on the Patreon episode. But at the end of the movie, The Shining, you know, Jack Torrance is out frozen. The Overlook is standing, no problem. But in the book, he burns it down.
He
goes to the boiler,
yeah,
room, and he kind of makes amends. Like he, you know,
he fights off the influence of the hotel.
Yeah.
And
blows it up to destroy it,
right,
and the family gets away. We should say that Dick Halloran is dead in the movie, but in the book he's not.
Right. Which I thought when you see that character in the trailer, I was like, well, he has to be a ghost.
Yeah.
Like the way they're going to get
him. I remember
him,
you presumed that we talked about it, and,
yeah,
I'm like, no, he's alive in the book in Dr. Sleep. Cause,
right,
yeah,
but
in the beginning.
This, I had to feel like he takes an axe to the chest in the,
right,
you know,
in the movie.
In,
right,
the movie. So I was like, if they do this, if they want to include him, Danny can do whatever Danny is like a deus ex machina. He can do whatever,
yeah,
he wants. So the idea that Dick is still talking to him,
yeah,
is definitely possible.
Now in the book, those scenes of him talking to Dick in the beginning when he's a little boy are like he's there in real life.
He's like a dad. He's like a father figure.
Yeah,
to,
like
to
they
Tom,
all
to Danny.
The three of them moved to Florida, which is how the book ended,
right?
And then the scene where Dick comes to him later is kind of in kind of an afterlife capacity. That's also in the book, but now Dick has died just because of old
yeah.
age.
Old age, yeah. yeah. So I just want to give a rundown real quick of Mike Flanagan's filmography, just so we're all aware of, like, so he did Oculus in 2013.
Which was solid.
WWE
It was a WWE production. He did a flick called Hush, which if you haven't seen, it's insanely good. It's actually got one of the sisters from Haunting of Hill House. She's deaf, and there's a Michael Myers-style character stalking her in the house, but she has no idea. She can't hear him.
Tommy Elliott?
Not Tommy Elliott, no. Ouija, Origin of Evil.
Oh, boy.
No, that's the good one.
Okay.
That's the that's the prequel that was better than the first one.
We reviewed one of those.
We did. Origin of Evil. Because that's it's 2016, so we had to have done that one. Gerald's Game, which was on Netflix, and then Dr. Sleep. And then he did, he's involved, I think, completely with The Haunting of Hill House. That's
which was really good.
And the second season is gearing up to get going.
So
but it's an anthology, not a sequel.
Yes,
right?
It's a different house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gerald's Game is a Stephen King novel that was adapted to a Netflix movie, and so he directed that, and that's his end to the Stephen King universe.
Correct.
And then also why the doctor in this movie that has basically a cameo in this movie has much larger role in the book, but it's the guy from Gerald's Game. Actor's name, that character actor?
I don't know.
Oh, you mean Chunk?
No.
No, the doctor.
Oh, Bruce Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood,
he's
the main character for me.
Oh, I didn't realize that was Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah.
Main character in what?
You didn't realize that was him?
I didn't realize that was Bruce Greenwood. I'm watching.
In this movie?
Yeah, I'm watching St. Elsewhere right now, and he's a major character on St.
Elsewhere. Bruce Greenwood is on the level for me of Patrick Wilson and Kurt Russell. I love Bruce
Greenwood.
It's
funny when you watch St. Elsewhere because Bruce Greenwood was supposed to be like the hunky doctor, and he's got like
the
flowing hair.
I could see that back then for sure. Yeah,
but he's the main one of the leads in Gerald's Game, so he cast him in this.
Well, that's so in this movie also. Patrick the Elliot from E.T.
Elliot
Henry
from E.T.
Henry Thomas is the younger version of Jack Nicholson.
I did not realize. Yeah. I didn't even know he was still acting.
Oh, he's in The Haunting of Hill House. He's a main character.
Oh, see, I've never seen it, but I hear everyone says The Haunting of Hill House is
really
amazing.
Good.
You will.
And you're not a horror guy, Tom, and you say it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah. You will burn through that.
Okay.
Barry the Chunk is also in The Haunting of Hill House.
Who was Barry the Chunk?
I wasn't going to say
in
it.
In the book. That was the character's name.
But the little kid hears it.
But
as
the
Barry
little
the
kid
chunk.
Doesn't know
what
that
means.
And she does think it's Barry the Chunk.
Yeah, in the book she goes, I think his name is Barry the Chunk, but yeah.
And
that's
trying to remember,
how he's referred to in the credits of this movie.
In the book, he wasn't Asian. There was like another reason they were calling him that, and I don't remember what it was.
Because this character, when you see him, you're like, he's not Asian.
Right.
I can't remember why, if he ate Chinese food or what. That was pretty far ago in the book, and I finished it a while back. So,
but he's got, Flanagan's got his own little...
But they don't explain
American
it in
horrors.
The movie, but if you read the book, you'd know why he's called Barry the Chunk.
Right.
Okay.
That's the advantages anyone knows to books where they can't include all the stuff in the movie, but fun little tidbits that you...
So, so this thing opens up with a young Danny cruising around on the... he's having a nightmare, right? Is that right?
I mean, he is cruising around on his big wheel.
And I got to tell you, it feels like
the
Kubrick.
The recreation.
It's, man.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, we talked about it in Ready Player One. But this is next, like this is, it's shot for shot, like it's identical.
I thought Ready Player One was just as masterful as far as that recreation. I mean, that looked like,
so the thing with Ready Player, I agree,
that looked like footage from The Shining. I mean, that was incredible.
But this one, like if you watch The Shining, when Danny is trolling around on the on the ground, like,
you're talking about the camera work,
not even just the camera work, but like the hotel isn't right. Like if you watch that, go back and watch that when he's making turns. Mm-hmm. He's going places where there shouldn't be places.
Really?
Yeah. Like
you matched it up that perfectly that you know that part.
Yeah, like, I love that movie.
Okay.
So like when he's doing it again here, it's the same deal where like he's going, like when you see there's a scene where he's driving past like a landing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he turns, he should be turning like there shouldn't be a turn where he's turning.
But are we to presume that
it's like the Brady House?
Kind of. Yeah.
But are we to presume that when we see him strolling around that it's like a shot-for-shot remake, the same path, or couldn't he be just driving a different path?
Oh, he could be, but my point is, like, the hotel is constantly, in the 80 version, the way that they do that, you are constantly not able to feel comfortable mm-hmm. because he's making movements that he shouldn't be able to make.
Oh,
and your brain is just like, you can't turn there. Like,
that's
there
interesting.
Be a,
I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
There should
okay.
be a wall where you're turning, and he's just like going from like place to place. Yeah. So it's the same. He cruises past room 237.
But what Mike Flanagan does real quick that we touched upon in the Patreon stuff is that the way that Kubrick shot a film was so
Ooh,
unique
man.
And why he's a master. And you, all his movies, they have the symmetry, and he shot a lot of floor to ceilings and used the more square aspect ratio so he could get more in, not that he was cutting things off. And so the way that Mike Flanagan recreates these scenes
yeah.
with the Overlook, it's really well done. Where
it makes
feels
it look
like a Kubrick
bigger.
Shot. You
yeah.
know, it,
yeah,
he does
yeah.
a really good job of capturing that.
Yeah, and honestly, I think because Flanagan did not shoot 4x3,
right, now it's super
it looks
wide.
Even bigger. Like it's even more an imposing place.
Yeah.
So he cruises past room 237. The door kind of opens up, and this was one of the scariest shots of the movie. Like where they hold on the shadowy there. You can't see into the room, and just as you get just enough of the bathtub woman to come into frame that was absolutely horrifying. Like it's minimal and it works.
They did a good job of recreating her too.
Oh yeah. 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 So Danny freaks out, wakes up, and we see it's back to young Danny, and he's having a nightmare. And, Wendy, the not shirtless Shelley Duvall, comes running in, and I thought this
well,
guy.
No, he was going to the bathroom. And he
oh,
has to
that's
pee
right,
his
that's
pants
right,
because
right.
he won't go in there.
He won't go
it's
in
scary,
there because
yeah.
he sees her
and she comforts him.
Yeah, she well the bathtub lady kind of pulls the, and it's interesting. Like in this version, I feel like in the 80 version, it's the beautiful woman in the bath when she pulls
it first,
back.
Sure, yeah.
yeah. And this one, it's the yeah. not the beautiful one. It's the gross one. Mm-hmm. And he does. He pees his pants, and Wendy shows up. And I thought this woman was really good.
I like how they recast them all.
I
they
do.
Didn't
I like
do CG. They it's just different actors
yeah.
that played that, it similarly, but
they're like they evoke
when they get to that scene where you see. I thought it was Shelley. I thought they just played the scene from the 80 version.
Oh, really?
Like when Jack's crashing
when
through the door.
And when they recreate.
Man,
yeah,
she looked just
that
like
was
her.
Good.
Yeah, but I thought they did a really good job of with Dick and
yeah.
Shelley Duvall's character of recasting people who you instantly knew who they were supposed yeah. to be, but they weren't lookalikes.
They weren't caricatures, though.
Right?
They
weren't doing impersonations.
It,
yes,
it
was
exactly.
their it was their own.
She sounded like her too.
Her
voice was good.
Yeah. She had the same like regional accent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I wonder if they're from the same.
Oh, maybe
part of the country or something.
Are you gonna say you didn't like Jack though?
I didn't.
That's most people's complaint. I didn't have.
I get what you're saying.
I did not like how they did Jack.
It's just such an iconic role. I get that everyone wants Jack Nicholson and
right.
anybody else that's not Jack Nicholson.
I don't have a better solution.
Right.
You can't. He's too old. Even with yeah. de-aging, I don't think it would work.
I think it could work.
Also, you can't afford him.
And he's not working anymore
because
he has issues.
Yeah. And so it's like that scene, even though I thought objectively it was a good scene.
Yeah.
It played well, but like I couldn't not focus on the fact
it was
that
hard.
It wasn't Jack Nicholson.
I know that's the problem
because
he's
got the right hair, he's got the right build, he's got the right side.
But I
didn't
also
have the voice.
Didn't have the voice.
But that's the thing. He would seem like a caricature if he was
I
doing
know.
An impression.
I know.
So I like
I
that. It's like you
yeah.
could tell he was supposed
not
to be.
A, there's right? not a good answer.
But you could tell yeah. who he was supposed to be with the yeah. hair and look and everything. And he did a good job acting. But it's like
you could also say that maybe it's not him. The way that they position it, you
oh.
know what I mean. I mean, he's the ghost bartender, and that's not you know what I mean. So like,
yeah,
but I took that as he took over. Like that's the thing. The Overlook. When you become a part of it, you
right.
just fall into place. Just similar to him.
I guess
being,
that's. I guess Grady does become.
Yeah,
part
he was
of
the caretaker, and then he's part of the staff.
Yeah, he's a waiter.
And then the fact that Jack is in the picture at the end of The Shining. Spoilers for 1980 Shining. but you know, it's like you become a part of it, and it's like, well, he can't. He's here present day, like
right.
now he's a part of it. So it's like once they take you, I guess you just become
right.
You're you become something else.
Right.
Not,
well,
yeah.
we see that later.
Mm-hmm.
Like so, and that's one of those things that it like even after watching this changes a thing from the movie from the 1980 version that I didn't even think about until it happens in this movie, and I was like, oh, that makes like
what is it? Can you talk about it now?
Yeah. So when Danny is attacked in. When Danny goes into room 237 mm-hmm. in the 1980 version, he comes back and his neck's all messed up and his sweater's torn. Mm-hmm. And Wendy kind of screams at Jack and is like, you did this to
right.
him. That the hotel wants Danny. They didn't want Jack.
Right.
They knew
right.
that Danny had the power.
And in the book, they spell that out a little bit more clearly. And that Jack almost wants to like have sex with the hotel. Like he's like in love with the hotel and thinks he's going to be the caretaker of the hotel, and that will be his destiny. Right.
Right.
And then, but then it's, they're using him to get to Danny.
Right.
And then that's why he starts trying to kill Danny, is because he's like, well, if Danny goes away, then it'll want me.
So then they go after Jack. Well, in this one, they get Danny. Like, they get what they want.
Oh,
they want it
later
on. Yeah, they want. Then they finally get what they want. He gives them. Well, he doesn't give them what he wants,
but
he.
That's
does,
interesting.
Sort of.
You're right. Yeah.
Like so, that changes that whole idea that they was trying to. And in my brain, is Danny accidentally used The Shining in a way that like Rose the Hat would have used it, or like used the power to repel 237, and then whatever was in the hotel was like, we're gonna go take care of your dad. And then that'll take care of you.
Hmm.
So we see the little girl. We see the little girl first at her birthday party. Oh no, we see the girl get killed by Rose the Hat.
Yeah. So
yeah.
God damn it.
That's the opening scene of the movie. Is actually to be introduced to Rose the Hat and the True Knot.
Who steals this movie?
Oh my gosh, Rebecca Ferguson is good in everything, and she's played such a wide array of characters: badass in Mission Impossible, opera singer in The Greatest Showman. She's very talented.
Yeah.
She can, she is so charismatic and like mesmerizing. She's so engaging in this movie. The accent, I don't know what the hell that was. That was
I
the
thought
only
thought it was
that
supposed
bothered
to be Irish.
Me.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be kind of like Irish gypsies.
I don't know what the hell she was doing. It kept dropping in and out.
Did.
It was very weird. So
yeah.
Her performance is so good that it didn't ruin it or anything.
Right.
But I was just like, oh God, that's distracting.
You could also make the argument though that her accent might drop in and out just because she's so old. She's so far removed from that accent that she's been traveling. Because in the book they spell this out a little bit more, but the True Knot, which is a dumb name, they just drive around the country. That's all they do. They just circle the country, and then they have a base of operations, and this is not utilized in the film.
No.
But that base of operations is basically where the overlooks used to stand.
It's a campground.
It's a campground that was like adjacent to the
overlook. That makes sense.
That's why they end up back at the overlook at the end of the
book.
Because
they're like
the campground.
They're like the Danny and his crew are like, we're going to go take the battle to them.
Okay.
And where that is the overlook.
Yeah. That's kind of brilliant.
Where in this one, he's more like,
we're going to the overlook.
Let's go weaponize
let's go to the overlook.
Let's go weaponize the overlook
and
use it to take her out.
So,
okay.
But so we see what Rose the Hat does. She's this super charming, charismatic person played masterfully by Rebecca Ferguson, and she lures this little girl.
Little girl, yeah. And she tricks her.
And you see the creepy. This was one of the
creepy.
This movie and the book is not very scary. It's definitely more of like a thriller than a horror. Like the book, Dr. Sleep, is not very scary. So there's not that much scary stuff in the movie except for, I think, what they tried to recreate with The Shining. But the scene with the True Knot, just how creepy they are with like one of them.
Well, you'd hear like you would focus on the little girl and Rebecca Ferguson, and then all of a sudden you hear like a crack.
Yeah, and then
and
all
you
of a sudden
turn around,
there's
like two
there.
Of them.
Crow Daddy's there,
right.
And then you go back to Rebecca Ferguson, the girl, and then you look, and
there's
eight
more
of them surrounding them, and they get closer each time.
Yeah.
It's unnerving.
It is very.
Really
and
well
then
done.
They attack. Like what do they call it?
Her steam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they Rebecca Ferguson's power, part of her. It's interesting that they give. They've all got a shine,
but it's
different versions of it.
Yeah, it allows them to do different things.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like Rebecca Ferguson can take your shine and deliver it to other people. She can locate a shine.
Yeah.
Like Crow can dull your power, and then so like and then Danny. I feel like Danny and the girl Abra can do all of it.
They're
like
very powerful.
She
they're
says, most, she, like, when Danny finally...
It gets weaker as you get older.
Right. Or and, when you put stuff into your body.
And then Danny has been, one, actively not using it, and then also has been actively suppressing it with drugs and alcohol.
Right.
So what's really interesting that the book does, and this movie does a great job of showing it too, was, I mean, growing up with The Shining, I always kind of wondered what happened to Danny too, and that's what Stephen King was always asked, and that's why he eventually wrote the book. But when I saw what Danny was doing, like, or when I read what he was doing in the book, like, I just never would have thought, like, oh, now Danny Torrance is a drunk, uses drugs. Whoa. He's just kind of a drifter. He's doesn't have, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm just thinking, like, oh, he's Danny Torrance from The Shining. Of course he's doing something. I didn't know what it would be, but, like,
right.
You know, but it's like, wow, I love the direction that King went with his character. And it makes so much sense because the only thing that does dampen his shine are drugs and alcohol suppress it. He drinks to forget. He drinks to turn that radio down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Well, and then you also have to look back and go, well, was that why? Why his dad was drinking?
Could have been possible. I mean, they do say that there's a lot, like Dick Halloran, I think, is related to somebody that was in the fire in Deary and in It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of like all these characters start to interconnect if you read all his books. But yeah,
but somebody used The Shining to get those people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's how
there's a nightclub fire that's like a black nightclub.
Yeah.
That's like off in the woods, and like
the kid sees it happen.
Right, and that's what, and a lot of things happen, kind of radiate out from that fire, and so like Dick's brother, I think.
Yeah, he's related to somebody in that.
Or cousin, like, ran that club, and then they I think they fled that town, and that's how he would work in Florida in the summer, and Florida in the winter, and then the
Colorado
Overlook in the summer. And then there's another book, I can't remember which one.
Well, I guess
about a black girl that gets murdered that's part of that sequence, too.
Well, I guess, wouldn't Carrie have The Shining?
A lot of people think that that's what Carrie has. That's a long-running theory.
Is that she's part of the...
And, like, Carrie gets mentioned in The Dead Zone.
Yeah.
Like,
there was an incident at the high school or something.
Right, yeah. So it's like that was, you know... So there's a lot of these things that start to interconnect if you read all the books.
It's interesting when you go back and watch Castle Rock.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, the Castle Rock town is set... Like, Shawshank is right there.
Right.
Like, that's part of the thing.
Yeah.
I jokingly said that the gal from Evil Dead and Don't Sleep, like, the main character, is in that as well.
Okay.
And she's Jack Torrance's niece.
Okay.
Her name is Jackie Torrance. I'm not even making that up.
That's what I said.
Yeah. And The Shining is very much about addiction, and
oh, absolutely.
And Stephen King has his own issues that he's been vocal about. Uh-huh. I don't know him well enough to know things to out him, but
Steve,
yeah, me and Steve and
Stevie King.
But it's that book is very much you like rereading that book, especially as an adult. I'm like, this could only be written by a recovering alcoholic.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that's
Jack in that book. Actually, his name is John. He's sober longer. He'd been sober longer before they got to the Overlook. Jack says, like, it's been the longest 5 months of my life.
Yeah, but
in the book, it's like 7 or 8 months for this
version.
But
he was white-knuckling it. He wasn't doing anything. He was just like, because in the book, they had him and his drinking buddy had maybe run over a girl with their car.
Yep.
And that was kind of his moment of like, I got to get this under control.
Yeah.
But he didn't actually go seek help.
Right. He just did it on his
own. He just did it. And so he was not set up to win.
And that's interesting. Like Jack, the Jack character is completely different.
Yeah.
In the book. He's a much more loving, and
there's more of a progression. Like if you watch Nicholson's performance, like he starts off
crazy. That scene, like, it's funny. That scene in the VW Bug, when he's talking about great, he learned it on TV, and it's like, you're already crazy pants before we even get there.
He starts at an 8.
Yeah,
in the book, it's much more of a build to watch him kind of go crazy, and you have more sympathy for him because he doesn't start insane, and he is trying.
Right,
and
I feel like that's Danny.
Yeah.
I feel like the Danny character...
It's a very similar arc.
Yeah.
Except he succeeds.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He fights it off when he has to fight it off. So we see Danny, and he's a mess. Like, drugs and alcohol, all of the... picking fights in bars.
Waking up just next to random people from bars.
With puke all over the place.
Yeah, there's cocaine on the table, and there's kids... kid running around with all this happening.
Yeah.
Just, you know, looking for his mom who's thrown up in the bed and, you know, next to... It's just...
It's bad.
It's your first introduction to Dan as an adult in this book, in this movie, and in the book it goes into the same stuff. And so it's really interesting to see what he's become. But as you read or as you watch the movie, you understand that he's doing this. It's not necessarily like, I mean, part of it could be genetic, but he's also doing it to dampen the shining, like we were talking
about. Has he started the box thing yet? Or does he start that as he's getting sober? It's as a kid?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one of the things is that Dick, the ghost of Dick Halloran comes.
The regular Well, he's shining with him, but he's not a ghost yet. He's alive.
When he does the box thing?
He's a kid, yeah. Dick didn't die at the Overlook, and he's a kid when he does this. Dick's just...
Dick, but the Dick in this movie did die at the Overlook. The Dick in Doctor Sleep died at the Overlook.
Oh.
Because that's the thing, is like, Flanagan is taking all these different threads and trying to lead...
How do you know that? Why do you think
because
that?
He's a ghost.
Not if he's just shining?
Yeah, because... No, yeah. So the scene where...
Well, because in the book, he's not dead. So Tom just came back from a pee break, I presume. Joe thinks that the...
If I was pooping, I'd still be gone.
No, well, Joe
they
thinks...
They can't...
Oh, Joe thinks that the Dick hollering at the beginning of Dr. Sleep is dead, not just communicating with Danny through The Shining.
Yeah, he's dead.
Because in the book, he's not dead.
In the book, he's not dead. In the movie, I took it as he's dead.
Cause remember, really? Yeah, because he's sitting...
There's a shot where he's sitting there on the bench talking to Dick, and then they kick over to the mom's POV, and he's not there.
Well, I know, but they can communicate. I just took it as The Shine. Like, he was...
No, I think he's dead.
I just figured
he died when he was older, just like in the book.
I mean, especially since we see that the Overlook did not explode later in the film.
We're playing off the Kubrick version.
I take it that we're going with the events of the film and that Dick's dead.
I mean, this doesn't matter either way because he's about to be an adult and then be dead in the book. I mean, it doesn't matter, but I just took it as he was communicating.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I think that's the point, though. This is Flanagan has to take all of these different threads from the book, from the movie, and now this new version and thread them all together. And when they said that Dick Halloran was going to be in this movie, I was like, well, he's a ghost. And he'll be able to... And we see that like, Danny communicates with ghosts throughout the entire movie.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, so he kind of says...
I just, as a book reader, I just was kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way it's shot, you could interpret it that way. Like, it's,
I just mean, but they never clarify that he's dead because of the...
I feel like if the Overlook wasn't there, then your theory is right.
But they're picking and choosing. You could still say that they do both. I mean, the Overlook can be there and Dick can be not dead because they're picking and choosing all sorts of different. I don't think there's one consistent thread that shows that everything is following the book or everything is following them.
Yeah.
But he could very well be. I just didn't think of it that way.
So he kind of says, he's like, you're going to take all that crap from the Overlook and you're going to put in these boxes and you're going to lock them up and you'll never have to, they'll be locked away. And they won't bother you, and that's kind of what he starts to do.
Yes. Now, in the book, I don't remember it as multiple boxes. I remember it as one box. And, like, in this one, it ends up basically being, like, all these characters from the Overlook keep popping up in his life, and he locks them in boxes.
As they show up, he locks them up.
In the book, I took it more as just, it wasn't necessarily the Overlook. It could be, but it was more just, like, he could...
Almost, he could lock
The Shining in the box and not have to deal with it.
Interesting. So then we flash forward to Danny, and he's in this awful situation. He's going to take money from this gal. Ghost Dick shows up. That's a weird thing to say. and says, don't do that. Like, put the money back. She's like, she stole mine. And then here comes this little baby that comes toddling out. And it's just like, oh, God.
This is something in the book he struggles with the entire book.
Is leaving them there.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a thread that gets a little lost.
Yeah.
In the film.
You get the one shot later.
Yeah.
And you're, I'm
yeah, because you get that. Because, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, they die. And then he feels more guilty.
Do you see them die in the book?
You don't see them, but he knows they die. Yeah, just like, okay, you know, but it's
this is his rock bottom. And so the Dr. Sleep also deals a lot with alcoholism and recovery. And so, and even more so than the movie does, and the movie deals with it. Right.
Right.
But like, this is his rock bottom.
This is
his moment of like, and like, you know, there's a point in the book where they're talking about him and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you kind of like, you stand up in these meetings and you talk about these horrible things that you feel like you were part of. And that's the one thing he won't talk about.
Is the Overlook?
This kid.
Oh.
And I don't know that, I don't think the movie makes it as clear, but in the book, the kid was like, he's grabbing for the cocaine because he thinks it's candy.
Oh.
And so.
They keep saying canny, mama, over and over again.
Right.
It's something that haunts him, that kid going canny.
Yeah. And so, like, he puts the coke out of reach and he sets the kid off to the side and steals money from her. And he's kind of like, so, I mean, I took the coke from the kid. So, like, it's fine. But he's still kind of.
They bought the coke with my money, I'm sure. So
and he's still, but he still left this kid in this awful situation and didn't do anything to rectify it, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
But in the book, it ends up that her brother ends up the woman's brother is like abusive and abuses this little kid, and so like he didn't do anything to help the situation. Then he ends up murdering them.
Got it.
Don't show you how they die, but they actually die because the brother is like a psychopath. abusive murderer. Yeah.
Interesting.
So he didn't do it with the coke or anything, but it was like, but still, he did nothing to help the situation. And he stole from them. So.
Right. So this is what we flash to a very young Abra at a birthday party. And of course, she's like giving the magician guff, and she's like, "I can do that." And he's like, "All right, yeah, cool." So the parents go inside, and I felt like the woman that played Abra's mom was also the woman who played Wendy, but it's
they
not.
They do look similar.
I wondered if they did the same thing as some kind of like a parallel to like the mother of, you know, because she's like the young Danny. She's,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. I thought they looked exactly the same.
They looked
too.
Fair, but yeah. It's not. It's not. Okay. We sat through the credits to make sure that it was not.
When I saw her, I'm just like, yeah, I totally could see that.
So the mom and dad go into the. They do like a trick with a spoon. The magician does, and Abra, young Abra's like, "That's easy." And the guy's like, "Ugh, God.
I'm not hiring a magician that acts like
right.
Yeah, okay, kid, whatever."
And so then all of the mom and dad go into the kitchen, and like the forks are everywhere. Everything's
spoons.
Well, the forks are all over the floor. But the dad looks up, and every single spoon is sticking straight up into the ceiling. And Abra's just kind of standing there laughing.
That's a good little jump scare when they drop.
Yeah, but she and not laughing in a maniacal way, just like, look what I can do.
Yeah.
So then we flash back to Danny, who's on a bus, and he's packed up his things, and he's going to.
And we see him like wakes up in a gutter with a bottle.
And gets on a bus. And Dick kind of says, "You gotta get it together. Like you can't do this. You gotta get it together." And Danny gets on a bus, and we go see The Rock's brother from Hobbs and Shaw.
The same thing,
which I was like, interesting choice. Yeah. That guy's a great actor. Yeah. Like I'm not, but it's just funny.
He plays Billy,
yeah,
who's like a maintenance guy of this town,
and he kind of takes Danny under his wing. He gets him. An apartment, like a one-bedroom apartment, like a one-room apartment.
And he shines, too. It's just weak.
Oh, I didn't realize
he
that.
He has the shining, and that's why
he automatically trusts Danny and knows trying to fix his life.
He has feelings about people, and they say it in the movie. He's like, "I had a feeling," but they go into it more in depth.
I took that as like, I've seen people get off this bus before.
No, Dan can tell that he has the shining.
Okay.
Because then they address it in the movie as well of certain people have different levels of it.
Right.
Yeah, and so, yeah, he has a very small one, but he always can tell if people are good people or not. Billy
so then
does.
Why doesn't he lose the steam when he dies?
What do you mean?
So when Billy... We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there. So Danny starts to get clean and he starts to get it together. And, I like that they explain the chalkboard wall with like it was a teacher from wherever. And so like Danny kind of wakes up. He's starting to get it together. He goes to the meeting with Bruce Greenwood and he immediately uses the shine. Like we don't know how long he's been sober, but long enough that the shine is starting to kick in again. And there's this interesting interaction between the three of them. And Bruce Greenwood's kind of messing with his wrist. And Danny looks at him and he stops for a second and Bruce Greenwood walks away. And he's like, "Look, you were doing surgery. This kid has some weird bone thing, Golagama.
Yeah.
But you left your watch on
the sink or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, I saw you fidgeting with your hand. That's where it is."
I wish they could have elaborated on the AA stuff more because the doctor has such a larger part in the book.
Right.
I mean, this is the only time you see him in the movie, but like he has such a larger part in the way he talks and guides Dan. He's such a huge part of his
and
recovery.
And like him and Billy help Danny. Help Danny like take on the true knot.
I would have loved to have seen more Bruce Greenwood.
His character is a huge part, and also like Dan is just like kind of he still isn't like sure of like what he's gonna do, and the doctor character is like, "We don't mess around here. You don't miss a meeting." And Dan's like, "But what if?" Oh, and he's like, "Well, then you're not in the right place or whatever." He gives him this tough love kind of recovery thing.
And in the book, that's how Abra and Danny kind of get pulled together is because he's the doctor for Abra's family comes to him.
Yes, he's their doctor
because they're like, "We don't know what's up with our kid."
To do.
And then
is Abra in the same town in the book?
Like she's like two towns over something.
Okay.
So like
that's how she takes the bus there in the movie.
Yeah, I got it.
That's close.
I got it. Yeah.
And so and then the doctor goes to Danny because he's like, "You can do stuff like this," because he had done the watch thing.
Got it.
And
he goes with Danny to talk to their parents.
Right.
And because then they'll like, trust him. Like, you're the doctor. And
sure,
so it's
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
There's just that character is so important.
Yeah.
If they're, I get to cut for time, but like, there's so much that happens. I was very surprised that he was completely cut out other than a cameo.
Was there anything else they could have cut to get him in there more?
It's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of important stuff.
Right.
I think adding all the Overlook is what.
Oh, sure.
The time up.
Right.
They cut that stuff to do a sequel to The Shining movie, which I think for crowds, which they, I guess, obviously didn't turn up, but
yeah, which
is a shame. But, I mean, that was a crowd-pleasing type of choice, and
sure,
it was
sure.
well executed.
Yeah. So, so Danny, he goes to see the doctor. He was like, how did you know that? And he was like, I got a thing. So he was like, have you ever been an orderly before? And he's like, nope. He's like, well, I got you a job set up where basically he's at a hospice center and he's just an orderly. That's all he's doing. And we see that the reason this movie is called Dr. Sleep is because Danny starts to help folks who are on the way out feel comforted.
Pass over.
And not be scared.
Yeah.
Like he kind of calms them down and tells them you're going to be okay. Yeah. It's like, and then the first guy we meet calls him Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
And I did like that he was initially calling him Doc.
Yeah.
And I was like,
cool,
that's a good little.
It's cool how they tie it in. Because
I thought that as like they had like a clairvoyancy as they were going out. So they knew who he was.
Yeah, no.
But if it's just them calling him Doc, like I was like, all right,
and I like how they do it. Like you're doctor, right? And he's like, I'm not a doctor. I'm just an orderly. But he calls him. No, you're
thanks a lot, Doc.
And then he calls him Doc. But of course, in The Shining, and they certainly hammer it home in this movie. I was getting a little sick of how many times they called him Doc.
Yeah.
Like even with my kid, like he has nicknames to call him, but I don't say the nickname in every sentence I speak to him.
They called
hey,
him
Doc,
Doc,
hey,
a
Doc.
Lot in the book.
Really?
In
okay.
The Shining.
Oh, did they
called him Doc? I mean,
it's been a long time.
That was their primary way of referring to him in the book.
Okay,
was
I just
Doc.
I'm just like every line they say had Doc in it. But anyway, but of course he was what's up, Doc? Like
right,
Bugs Bunny,
right.
And they even show it in this movie. And so I like how it transitioned to being Doc, as in Dr. Sleep. It was just it's nice how they do that.
It was.
But it's 8 years later, so
we flash forward, and Danny's okay. Like,
yeah,
he's gotten himself together. He's doing really well at his job. He's completely clean and sober.
Got his 8 year chip. I mean, he's been sober since then. He's working in this town.
We do so before we get to that 8 years. We see that Danny wakes up one day, and it just says hello on the board, and he writes hi back, and that's the end of it.
So they've been pen pals during this whole time, just
a little
small
off and on. Yeah, and finally. He wakes up, and then he, he writes the, so I think she says hi, and he writes the word school, and she smiles, and she gets up. And this is where we get an idea of like maybe how strong she is, where, she goes to school and she's reading people's thoughts, and she kind of stops. Is this where she kind of hits Rose the Hat the first time?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I wish I did.
Either way. Like, so she's not screwing around with the Shining.
The first time is when the spoons drop, I think. I think Rose feels that. It's stuff that Abra does that use power.
I think this is when Rose recruits Snakebite Andy.
Oh, yeah,
That.
That's right.
And
which I thought was a good little scene.
Yeah.
Where, like,
and she's like what they call, she can push.
Right.
Which is like she can put an idea in your head and make you do it.
Inception.
Kind of like these are not the droids you're looking for.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
God, is everybody in Star Wars Jedi's shiners?
Yeah. And so, and then from there, that's when you see the True Knot kill the baseball boy.
Oh, the kid from Good Boys.
I was like, Jacob
Tremblay.
That's
why he looks familiar.
Yeah.
Jacob Tremblay.
It's Jacob Tremblay. I thought, what a weird small role for Jacob Tremblay, who's been... starring in movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was in Room and then, Good Boys. And, he just pops up as kind of a main.
Yeah.
I can't believe he played a tiny role. And, and they do keep going back to him after he dies a little bit.
Right.
But it was just surprising because his voice is very distinct. And so when I heard him, but he has a baseball hat pulled down, and I go, oh, it must be Jacob Tremblay's brother. Like, they're trying to get him into show business.
Right.
Because he talks like him. And they show the mugshot or the missing photo, and I'm like, it is Jacob Tremblay.
So that's Rose the Hat says, we've got a line on that kid in Iowa. Why don't you go check that? To Crow, who was the security guy in Westworld.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah, I think he was like Anthony Hopkins' like right hand guy. I think.
Well, he's not Jeffrey Wright.
No. He was the security guy.
I don't remember.
Either way, he's in Westworld.
Okay.
So he goes to Iowa, and the guy's like, "Man, you got to watch this number 19. Like, it's like he's reading the pitcher's mind. Every time he comes up, he gets a hit. And of course the kid throws the ball and kid hits the ball because he's got the Shining.
Yeah.
So
he knows what kind of pitch he's going
right. to throw. Right. So Tremblay, the kid is walking down like a dirt road going home. And this is where we see Barry the Chunk. And he says, why don't you get in? And he's like, no, I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good. And then and here then comes Rose.
And then Snake, no, Snake Bite.
Oh, Snake Bite.
Yeah. That she's
at least
like,
a kid.
Yeah, because
she's like 15. She's supposed she's like, look 15, but.
Yeah, she's like, we're friends. You can get in the van. Like, she pushes.
I'm friends. We can get in the van. So he gets in the van. And I got to tell you, this was like some slasher stuff. And
but they, you know, they don't usually go there with kids, and
they don't.
They
it's
don't.
Surprisingly,
they go there twice,
multiple times.
Yeah,
but the fact that
three times because you got a toddler. That
oh, that's true.
You got
zombie toddler.
Yeah, and then you've got the two kids.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but you see it like you see them strapped
down
Jacob
gutting,
Tremblay,
they're gutting him.
And they're yeah. I mean, you don't see it. You see it happen, but you're not. It's not so graphic.
Oh no, it's not like Scream.
But he is tying them down. He's saying, "Please don't hurt me. I'm not going to tell anyone." Like,
yeah.
And so you see that whole scene play out, and then you know,
yeah, she kind of says, "She's like, it's we need the fear and the pain, and that enhances,
it purifies
and
the
pure,
steam.
Purifies the steam." And there's you know, and they kill this kid, and Abra feels everything happen. And it's, you know, her parents kind of think it's a night. Her parents know, I think, that there's something up, but she kind of brushes it off as a nightmare.
She doesn't talk about it. So she alludes to, like, since she was a kid.
She's stopped discussing this stuff because it freaks her parents out.
Right, exactly. Right. And then is this where, so I guess she contacts Danny, right? Mm-hmm. And then says, I need help.
Doesn't she say murder?
Oh, that's right.
Chalkboard?
Red Rum comes blasting through the chalkboard.
Well, it says murder, but he's looking in a mirror. So this time,
like, that's pretty great.
But just during this nightmare, she's freaking out because it's happening, and then it explodes into breaks it out of the chalkboard.
Right. So Danny, he writes the note to Billy, like I'll be back or something, and then he goes downstairs. He's like, Billy, he has to explain to Billy, I gotta tell you what happened. You gotta believe me. And Billy's like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
So they're driving to her, right? Or does she come to them? She comes to them.
Well, she comes to him when she takes the bus at first.
Okay, so that's the first thing that happens. Yeah. She comes to.
It's a while before he recruits Billy.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah. So he because he's like, he kind of gives Billy the, like, I gotta go talk to this kid and I'll be right back. So Billy and Danny and Abra kind of sit down. They explain who, you know, they figure out immediately who each other are. And Danny's like, lock it away. Don't mess with it. Don't screw with it. They're going to come after you. Leave it alone. Don't do anything with it. And this is where Dick's like, you got to go help her. Like, she's in trouble. They're coming for her. You got to go help her. So this is where he recruits Billy, and they go to see her. And I like where the guys, like, he pulls up to their house, and he was like, did you tell your parents about this?
Yeah.
And she was like, not really. And then, of course, the dad is super pissed, and he was like, Abra, you got to tell him. And of course, she hits him with like her version of the Shine, and it breaks down everything to the dad. And I love this scene with the dad
shaking.
Yeah, like he can't get it. And I do like that he pushes one for Danny, and Danny's like, "Nah, I'm good."
And they're both like,
he offers it to both
AA
guys.
Yeah, he's like, "Nah, we're all right."
So he pours himself another one.
Yeah. So they kind of they do a kill box is what they're doing here. Like, that's kind of what the goal is. Is they know how strong Abra is. And Danny hasn't done anything yet. Like, nobody knows about Danny. He's kept a low profile. Is this where?
Well, we should also mention with the True Knot that so in this past 8 years, less and less people have the Shine to feed off of. And they're like, we don't know if it's what's in the water or microwaves or whatever, but there's
like video games,
there's less
phones,
or kids getting treated and having
the medication exactly, like to suppress it. And so they're hungry. They're growing weaker. You know, and the True Knot, which they don't explain as much in the movie, but like Rose and the grandpa Flick or whatever.
It's the big guy from Men in Black.
They're old. They are old. We are talking about thousands, maybe tens of thousands. Like, they are old, and they the grandpa guy is the oldest, but he's, you know, super, super old. Rose is really old, but maybe only, you know, 150,000 or whatever. Like, they are super old, and they look so good because of their taking in steam, and that's what keeps them young, keeps them healthy. They age very slowly as she explains to Snakebite in that opening scene or the early on scene.
Where we do lose the old man.
Right. And so, I mean,
awfully.
Right. But during this whole thing, like, they're having to open up these canisters that Rose is capturing some of the steam after they take it in, and she only has a limited amount, and they're not replenishing them because there's not as many people. And so they're trying to figure out how in the hell to get by. And so once she connects with Abra, she realizes there's someone so powerful, and I'm guessing she's thinking, well, this steam can keep us young forever, or we can get a whole bunch of canisters, whatever. Like, they need this.
They need her.
Well, in the book, the plan was they weren't going to kill her.
They're
going to
turn her?
They were going to capture her and just
feed off
and
her.
just like get her close to death, but not let her die.
Okay,
so she could basically be a fuel source long term.
Interesting. It was
going to be worse than them killing her,
right?
Because they were basically planning to keep her alive for years,
however long it took,
so they could just keep draining the steam from her.
That makes sense. So they devise this plan where they're going to use Abra as bait. I guess earlier at one point Rose is at the store. This is that scene in the thing where she locks onto Abra, or maybe Abra's looking for Rose.
Dan says stay away, don't contact these people, whatever. But Abra is intent, and because of the baseball boy, she's like, I've got to find these people, and she can take over people. And so I love it when you see her floating. I mean, first of all, she floats up in the window,
the like astral projection part. It was cool.
And then she's in the grocery store like on a dolly shot, like she's gliding along, and I'm like, what the hell is happening? But then it cuts to Rose,
like,
pushing
a Spike Lee movie,
right? It did look just like a Spike Lee shot. And then you cut to Rose, and Rose is pushing a cart, and you see that she's actually taken over her.
Yeah,
and I thought that was really
cool. I do like when she's like, oh, there you are. And then of course Rose, who has been as far as she knows the strongest, all of a sudden hears Abra and literally forces her out and knocks her backwards and destroys this piece of glass.
The dairy refrigerator explodes. Yeah. And it was such a funny moment.
Stephen King movie.
Exactly.
Nothing good ever happens in dairy.
But people, in the grocery store look over at it like, how did a refrigerator door explode?
So this next scene where they're trying to trap Rose is Abra kind of lets herself be found. Rose tries to infiltrate, and then Abra, with no, like, she's kind of like Rey in Star Wars, where like no training whatsoever, just destroys Rose, like smashes her face. She tries to get any information. She's got like a, it's almost like a, like a, what are those,
filing cabinet,
but what are those ones called,
a Rolodex?
No, at a library.
Dewey Decimal System.
Yes, like those cards. Yeah. Like that's what it looks like. That's what she's going through.
Like index cards.
Index cards. And Abra smashes her hand, like gruesome, smashes her hand in the thing and won't let her leave. And Rose goes back, like flashes back to her thing, and she's like, Jesus, like she,
and no one's ever done that. Like
her
Rose
hand's
is
messed up.
Yeah, Rose is one of the strongest, and now with the grandpa guy down,
and
she's
shook. Like Rose is not like, it's not like she's like, oh boy, this is gonna be fun. She's like, this, we could be in trouble.
But she was in her head, like those filing cabinets are basically their memories and their knowledge. Yeah, and so Abra's going through and finding everything about them and knows what they're up to and who they are. And and it's crazy that what happened in her head like affected her to where like when she pulls her hand out of the filing cabinet, it's pulling the skin off, and then her hand really is damaged in real life.
So then I think they
go and dig up the baseball board.
That's right, they need the glove
so she can locate the others
where they are. So this is where Ewan McGregor and the other guy, they go to like dig up the boy's body. They dig him up, and it's a gnarly scene. Like there's a dead body, there's a dead boy in this. So they grab the glove. This is the scene where they go see the dad, and the dad freaks out, and they hand her the glove, and she's like, I got them. Like, I got where they're at. I got where they're going. And basically they decide that like, we're going to make you available. We're going to trick them to think that you are looking for them. They're going to follow us into the woods, and we're going to kill them. Like there's no like, we might capture them. Like, no, we're going to shoot them in the face.
Pretty badass scene. And
now that you've said that, I do kind of wish that Bruce Greenwood would have been here.
So when I finished the book, I just thought, wow, this really isn't that scary of a book. It's more of an adventure. It's a mystery. What's going on? It's got the sci-fi elements. but it's not scary. So I thought, how is this going to translate? Because people that have seen The Shining, they're looking for...
It is a weird tonal shift.
They're looking for a horror movie. Yeah. And I've heard the few complaints, because this movie is being reviewed pretty well and the audiences love it. The few complaints I've heard is that, oh, well, it's not scary, or it's totally different from The Shining. And it's like, that's how the book was. It's not a scary book. And so you get into these shootouts and you're just like, okay, it's good. But
right.
If you're expecting like a horror movie, it's not. That's just not what it is. But I like it. I like the tonal shift and the adventure that they go on. And,
right.
And I thought this was a great action scene with the sniper rifles in the woods.
And I like it too, because it's not a retread of The Shining until the end, although it's really well done.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have wanted 2.5 hours of that.
No.
Like I think
getting like half an hour of it was
perfect. Yeah.
They appeased the fans of The Shining movie, but they're still very true to the Dr. Sleep book, which is a different story and a different tone.
Right. So and they start Danny and Billy just start picking
Taking
people
them
off.
Out.
And like you see their bodies like deteriorate and the steam pops out of them. And just when you think they've got them beat, they only wound Snake Bite.
Mm-hmm.
And so Snake Bite kind of turns on Billy.
So stupid.
And says, you know, kill yourself. And of course, Billy takes the gun and blows his brains out.
So up till now, the movie's been very faithful to the book.
Okay.
This is where it diverges.
Yeah. So Billy doesn't die in the book.
So they have to get
it's
Billy
frustrating.
Out of there. I guess when they get to I guess they don't need Billy.
It's frustrating because it's like they're all a team and the doctor and Billy and Dan.
Right.
And it's like they killed him off. Why?
Because in the book, Billy is parked outside of the house, keeping an eye on Abra because Abra's doing like kind of the astral projection thing into the bunny to lure them, so they think that's where she's at.
Right.
But then Billy's sitting outside of the house to protect her in case they come up.
Okay.
But then Crow Daddy does and takes down Billy, but doesn't kill him.
Yeah.
Okay.
But meanwhile,
it doesn't kill the dad.
But meanwhile, Danny and the doctor
are
doing the shootout in the woods.
Okay.
But I will say, I really liked the scene when she's dying, she's just like, kill yourself.
Right.
And it does.
It was a
right.
badass moment and one of those frustrating things for a villain to do that, but I'm just like, I like Billy and he doesn't die in the book. Why kill him off? I mean, it was a good moment for an original thing, but...
So I feel like Billy is the Dick Halloran of this, like, he is this
version. Kind of the moral conscience.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you... I do kind of looking back. I think it could be an homage to losing Dick in the original movie, as we lose Billy as well, and plus that whittles it down to just Danny and Abra against Rose.
They're also trying to. I feel like they're trying to. Even though we understood in the book that Abra is like the new Dan, that she's going through similar things and all that, they keep making new parallels. Like in this movie, she loses a parent. In the book, the parents don't die.
Right.
So
they kill the dad. Crow Daddy kills the dad when he kidnaps her. And but now
I don't
it's
think
like
the good guys lose anybody in the book.
No, it's like a very. I mean,
yeah, like one of my kind of complaints about the book
is everyone's
was that like it really like they it wasn't that difficult for them to take down the true knot.
Sure.
Like it was like they meet in the woods. They take out 80% of them, and then they go to the side of the overlook and they have their fight, and then they're done. Like they never really have a moment.
There's no challenge
where they lose, except for the fact when Crow Daddy abducts Abra.
Yeah. I think too, when I was watching it, I was like, okay, they killed Billy, I guess, to actually show their stakes, because like you said, they show up in the woods and they take them all out.
Right.
Like most of the true
they
knot.
Take them out super easy.
As a film viewer, you may go, oh, that was cheap that they didn't lose anyone or whatever. So I can see why they did it. I didn't like it because I like Billy.
You like the character, you know, but that also makes the death resonate. And honestly, I don't know what the character would have added to what they do going forward.
Right. Sure. Kind of feel like Abra's doing what Billy was going to do anyway.
Yeah.
So Rose is distraught.
Yeah,
her entire family is gone. With the exception of Crow Daddy. Crow Daddy is driving with Abra. He gives this pretty good monologue where he's like, you know, this was going to go one way, but because of the garbage that you have pulled, this is going a completely different
way.
Yeah.
Like, some messed up stuff. Like he's telling this girl, like, now
you've changed nothing about your
fate.
Yeah,
that's right. Your fate stays the same, but it's going to be worse. Yeah, my dad. So Danny has lost his best friend at this point, and now he uses The Shining.
Yeah,
he goes
the first time he's actually like doing the astral projection, but into Abra, and it was a really funny moment.
It's a good scene.
So, this feels like I'm hungover.
Coming
out of a little girl.
How good is this girl?
Because it's her,
it's
right?
Completely different. Because she completely changes like how she
talks and
yeah,
you know, not that she does a voice, but she just changes her cadence and how she carries herself.
I love it when actors play other characters that a different actor are playing, and they have to somehow recreate that with you understanding immediately what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they do it well.
Like Face
that's
Off.
One of my, seriously, like John Travolta playing Nick Cage playing I think,
or All of Me with Steve Martin.
That's right.
So I love that when it turns out well, and it's such a cool performance to see an actor,
but to see
play
it from
an
a
actor.
Child.
Yeah.
She's good.
She's real good. Yeah. So she's basically, and Crow Daddy's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
And this is where we get an idea of just how strong Danny is.
Yeah.
Is that he can use, I guess, is he using her shine or his shine at that
point?
Hard
to say.
It's like they would,
or they could have combined.
They do this a little bit more in the book, in that they would go into each other's heads and kind of operate.
Okay.
You know?
So, and she pushes the whole the whole van into a tree.
Well, at first he asks him, are you wearing your seatbelt?
Well, no, he's like, you know what the best thing about people who are cocky is? Yeah. And the guy was like, no, he's like, they don't pay any attention. Yeah. And of course, the camera kind of pans down. He's not wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
And Danny moves the whole van and it crashes into a thing and Crow
he
Daddy
flies out the windshield.
Crow Daddy dies.
This is great. A clever kill too.
Very clever. And now Rose is all alone. So Danny has decided, he's like, look, the only way we're going to beat her is we got to go to one place that I don't.
And she's mad now. When she finds this,
she takes all
the steam.
Yeah, she's pissed, and her hand is immediately fixed, and she is coming for blood. So Danny's like, I know a place we can go. Yeah.
And so at this point, they're sequelizing the movie, and so the Overlook was just boarded up. It's still standing.
It was abandoned,
but it's still there. Yeah,
now this becomes almost a shot for shot. Almost remake of The Shining, like even the shot where Danny's driving up the road.
I mean, they're paying,
they use that same helicopter shot of winding
it's the,
up.
It's the theme. They're using the theme as well.
They're playing off the theme. You know,
I wouldn't call it a remake.
It's a riff.
They're definitely using that toolbox.
Yeah. Yes,
they're paying. This is where Mike Flanagan's paying homage to The Shining.
Yes,
and I wouldn't call it a remake either.
Remake is probably not
okay
because
the
it's
scenes
like
are different. If like the Force Awakens is a very like a soft reboot. They're doing a lot of the same things.
Well, they do a lot of the same things in this. Like they go to the bar with Floyd the bartender. They go to the where Danny's
Lloyd.
What did I say? Floyd.
Floyd.
Oh, Lloyd. Yeah. Lloyd. Where Danny is like backing up the steps and Rose the Hat is reaching out just like Jack Nicholson was. Like, so there's a lot
of
stuff that is in there.
That's fair.
So Danny walks
there's
in.
Also some references, I think. I don't remember in the movie so much, but more from the book. The whole take your medicine. Do they say that in the movie?
I don't remember that.
I think so.
From who to whom?
So
Pat, the Jack Torrance ghost does say that.
Oh, his alcohol is the medicine.
Yeah.
Well, and when he would get mad, he'd be like, take your medicine.
Yes.
In the book, you find out that that's what his dad would say.
Oh, really?
To them when he got mad, because his dad was a drunk and abusive too.
Yeah, I don't think in the movie they do that.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
But
The Shining?
That's
what I was saying. I don't remember The Shining, the medicine thing.
No, you're right.
In Dr. Sleep, when he's beating that guy up in the bar as he's punching him, he says, take your medicine.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So, but when he meets up with his dad, the dad, as Danny is fighting against him, the Patrick, whatever his name is, does say, take your, he's shoving the glass in Danny's face and says, take your medicine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So Danny walks in to the Overlook.
And I think Abra even says it once when she's trying to find him. She's like, come take your medicine. And that was something Jack would say when he was like trying to hunt them down within the Overlook in the book. He'd be like, come and take your medicine.
I feel like she may say it to Rose.
Maybe.
Like it's time for your medicine.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. But I really like this scene.
This is great.
I didn't have a problem. It was a little weird just because the things we talked about it's so iconic.
I liked the scene
really good.
In and of itself. Like of him interacting with his dad as the bartender.
Yeah.
I just the technology I don't know that it's quite there yet, but I don't know that it ever will be, just because when you take an iconic actor and you know it's not that iconic actor, it's hard to get lost in that moment in quite the same way.
It's maybe also if we such see a performance.
It, maybe if we see it enough, we will. And I was also put off by the voice didn't sound like Jack Nicholson, but on the flip side, like, you're not wrong that his voice is can be such a cartoon
yeah.
that if someone was doing the voice,
that, it
you'd be like, dude, dial
yeah.
back.
Yeah, I would say, how many comedians have we seen do an impression of
Oh,
Nicholson?
My God. Every third-rate hack comic right. has a Nicholson impersonation. And
but the fact that they recast them all, see, that's what I think yeah. really helped it, was it's like...
I think what would have helped is if we had seen that...
A flashback of...
Of him earlier
before, yeah.
to kind of establish and like kind of acclimate to this other than I know they wanted that big reveal.
Right.
But I think it would have
yeah.
worked better had they let us kind of dip our toes
yeah,
in the water
first sure.
before they just.
Like went. I said, did that with Wendy.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of her before
yeah.
you get to that scene where he's smashing through the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I think I mean but like. Writing and from a writing standpoint, from a performance standpoint even, and from how this story works within the context of the film, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
It's a really
like,
cool
it's
scene.
It's just the technology. I'm just like, I'm not yeah. entirely, and I don't know that you can ever get over it. I don't even know if you can blame it on the technology.
Well,
like
I mean, if we can look at a young Robert Downey Jr. or a
But it's Robert Downey Jr. playing Robert yeah, Downey yeah. Jr.
I see.
You know what I mean?
Full CG recreations. That's
yeah.
That's going to
yeah.
be interesting.
That's fair.
But yeah, I love that, you know, and you don't see him right away, but he just puts the drink down. And
so as Danny's walking through the hotel, Danny is basically waking up the hotel. Like the lights are turning on as Danny is just walking into rooms. Like he's not turning on switches. Like,
and the hotel is
guiding him,
is getting into better condition.
Yes.
Like it starts off really dilapidated, and the more he wakes it up, the more vibrant, yeah,
correct,
and
which leads to the
refresh the hotel
that it
looks.
Wants Danny,
right?
So yeah, so he sits down at the bar, and then we see like it's just like
it's a hand,
it, yeah, just a hand sliding a drink, and it pans up,
and
it's,
you hear it though, and you know what
yeah,
they're doing because
right.
he does have that cadence that he's trying to recreate, and he calls him Mr. Torrance,
right? And he was like, you know, and then they have this kind of a gut punch of a scene where Danny's just like, yeah, you're never like this is unbelievable, like you're here, like you're my dad, like blah blah. And even the ghost is like, I don't know who you're talking about. Like,
right.
He refuses to admit. And the harder Danny is pushing, finally, like the ghost kind of breaks and says, gives the take your medicine line, and Danny
yeah.
pushes it back. You think Danny's going to break. And
because this is what broke Jack.
Exactly. Like in the 1980s.
This is exactly how he broke in the book, too.
It was one drink
yeah.
from the bartender, and that was
and
it.
And a hotel that doesn't have any alcohol.
Right. Yeah,
like
exactly,
that was
yeah.
part of why he took the job, is he knew he'd be locked in a. In a hotel
with no booze.
With no booze.
Right.
Yeah.
So Danny, at this point, like he has everything set up. We see him go down to the, when he goes down to the boilers, and I was like, well, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Like if this is what they're going to do, that's, I don't think it's a middle finger to Kubrick, but at the same time, I kind of think it is.
Well, Stephen King got his ending.
I don't yeah. think it's a middle finger to Kubrick. I think it's a sucking up to Stephen King.
Mea culpa to Stephen King.
Right.
Because yeah. it was such a big deal for him, and it's like, finally, he gets this ending. It's really
right.
cool.
Although, if he had gotten that ending, he wouldn't have gotten this movie.
Correct. Yeah,
and
I mean,
so
everything happens for a reason.
You know,
and this.
And also, but back to the original Shining, though, like with Kubrick, like, I don't know why he chose to not blow up the Overlook, because, like,
sequel, baby, that Shining 2 money.
Yeah,
Kubrick was a big
yeah,
franchise
I'm sure that's,
proponent.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what Kubrick
that
was thinking.
That Scorsese cinema stuff?
Yeah.
Kubrick would have been like, no, baby.
Bitches.
Yeah. I'm
yeah.
taking that money.
Shining cinematic universe, baby.
But, you know, because it's like, you could have still done that and had that
yeah.
ending.
Yep.
Like, and
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know.
He did stuff like that throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, the Torrances are driving a bug. He just made it red because he's a dick.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if that's
yeah.
the real
why not
reason.
Make it yellow?
I don't know, but
there's
I'm just
no
saying,
reason.
You don't know.
You see a yellow bug on the side of the road.
They didn't have one. They had a red one.
They drive past a yellow bug.
What might be from that opening shot, a yellow one might wash out.
That's
not
what
be,
I. That's
not
why
be
I
started
the Patreon. I'm guessing it was a visual,
yeah,
a cinematography choice, but
maybe.
Because you know, they had that big giant, and also keep in mind the tracking shots weren't what they were now, because that opening shot in The Shining, you can tell they're on a helicopter.
Oh yeah,
because it's so shaky.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's a great shot.
It is a great shot,
yeah.
But like by today's standards, the technology isn't there, and it's
there's
very,
a lot of shinning references in the Shining episode for Patreon.
I like when he goes and revisits the door that still has the axe.
It's good.
Hole
it's still,
in
and
it
still says Red Rum on
and,
it.
Yeah, and he looks. Yeah. He just
and
looks
I,
around.
I like that, and I like that they didn't like feel the need to recreate that
you
scene.
Get,
no.
Well, they do kind
you
of.
You see her screaming, but
yeah.
you never get the here's Johnny,
yeah.
and like it would have been so easy to like play the hits,
right.
and they didn't.
No. Right.
I like how they start bringing back all the characters. characters. Uh-huh. Although I thought there'd be more blowjobs from people in bear suits.
I thought the same thing. I was like, of all the characters, they're not bringing back that one?
Like,
that's
yeah, we don't even see the bear suit, do we?
I don't think so.
And to me, that was one of the most like, whoa.
What the hell?
Yeah, what is happening? Yeah. And I was like, no bear suit?
No
really?
Bear suit.
Yeah.
So Jack, Abra kind of tells Danny, she's like, she's here. So Abra kind of runs in with Danny. Danny, I do like the scene where like you see the axe like in a glass fire case, and of course Danny takes it.
Well, and that's another way that you know for sure it's a sequel to the movie and not the book.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's not a mallet.
In the book, it's a roque mallet.
What? I thought it was not croquet. Like croquet?
It's roque, which is a offshoot of croquet.
Oh,
but yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it's not a croquet mallet.
It's not.
They go to great pains in the book to tell you they are not playing croquet.
That's because
this hotel was so fancy that croquet was for trash.
Oh,
it was,
wow.
But the rich people played roque. And it even tells you how to pronounce it because I would have pronounced it like roque. I think it's like R O Q U E.
Yeah, but this isn't croquet. It's roque.
Yeah.
So Rose gets into the main ballroom, and we see Danny and Rose kind of standing up the steps, the infamous steps with a typewriter in front of them. And Rose thinks she's in control. And all of a sudden they snap to the hedge maze.
Yeah.
That they did not find a shortcut through. So Rose is kind of chasing Abra throughout the hedge maze. And it's very similar to, you know, you'd see Rose kind of shoot around a corner, and Rose just kind of stands there and allows herself to be captured. I'm sorry. We see Danny. Nope. Abra, and allows Rose to get a hold of her. And Rose is like, at the same time, you see something in the background starting to get closer, and you have no clue. I had no clue what it was until they showed you what it was. I was like, oh, he's going to use the ghost of his dad to like chop her into pieces. But all of a sudden, it's this giant box.
Yeah.
And it's closing in on Rose, and you're like, that's fudging brilliant. Yeah. Like, why? Yeah, okay, let's lock her in here as well. So she figures it out. She's like, this isn't these aren't your fears.
Yeah.
And then she snaps out of it, and she sees all of the boxes. And the trap the entire time is Danny's like,
we're going to release the overlook.
She releases it.
Yeah.
Knowing that like,
she does?
Yeah, she's like, what's in those boxes? And she snaps
them
open.
Oh, she thinks, what are you hiding
what
from
are you
me
hiding?
In these boxes?
She wants more. You're thinks it's got more.
Yeah.
This is where she realizes just how powerful Danny is. And all of a sudden,
they just
here
swarm
come
her.
All of the ghosts. You see,
here's ghosties.
Yeah. You see Grady with the bullet hole. You see the twins. You see everything from the overlook. And they
accept a bear suit.
Except a bear suit.
Can't say everything.
Well, I guess he was busy.
He was busy.
Yeah.
You can't see it.
Can't really attack somebody with your mouth full.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
There's an Easter egg. See, when you pause it and go frame by frame as they pass a doorway.
Right.
Just...
Well, I guess we should. So before we get to that where she reveals everything, Danny's got the axe and he tells Abra to run away. And he's backing up the steps just like his mom did. And the way Rebecca Ferguson is coming at him, it's almost identical to how Jack was coming at Wendy. And Danny takes a swing and clocks her in the shoulder with the axe, and then she kind of pulls it out and hits him in the leg and cuts his leg open pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
And he takes a fall very similar to the way Jack falls down the steps, which when you watch that again, like, that stuntman should have gotten paid double, because that is a gnarly fall. And this is where she reaches into his head and releases all the boxes, and then of course they attack her and kill her without even thinking twice.
Yeah,
like they
feast
Rose
on her the way they were feasting
exactly.
on kids.
She is dispatched quickly, and then all of a sudden they go after Danny, and you're just like, oh no! And then Danny stands up. We see Abra kind of running through the house. We see, I think she has an interaction with the bathtub woman. Mm-hmm. I think, and then kind of Danny comes around the corner, and he's standing just like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And he's, his ankle's busted just like Jack Nicholson.
His eye is white.
Right.
It's white over the...
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's how you know he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's hobbling. Like, he's same. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Which is interesting when you think about, like, if Jack... The way that Jack is talking at the end of the 1980 Shining, remember, it's marbled and gumbled, and he's not saying anything. So it's like, so if this... We're saying... Now Danny's doing the same thing. So maybe it wasn't the snow. Maybe it was just the influence of the hotel.
Oh, it's the hotel.
That made him go completely garbly gook.
Yeah, it's the hotel that does that to
him.
Okay,
that makes
sense.
I always took it as like he was so cold that he was just losing his faculties completely.
Yeah.
But if we're saying that it was the hotel.
He was slowing down certainly from the cold.
Sure. So they stumble into room 237, and this is where she comes face to face with the bathtub woman, which is just so gross. This is grosser, I think, and I don't know why, but it's just grosser. And
it's
Danny,
in high def.
Yeah, it's, that's
and they
good.
Linger. I think Kubrick does a better job of, like, you would get kind of glimpses, and then you'd cut away, and then but your mind
like,
would
what was that?
Your mind would linger on it long after the shot had left.
Which is why I think that first shot of her like coming out of the shadows and then it cuts off was one of the most effective things in the movie.
Yeah,
I'm just glad they didn't it chapter two it with that. I mean, because they had the large naked grandma. I mean, it's the same kind of gross creature, but it's like, oh, the way they did that was CG, and it was just there and just stomping around. Oh.
So Danny goes to swing and kill, because now the hotel wants Abra. Like, it's got Danny, so now it wants Abra. And he goes to swing, and Danny stops. And he was just like, and Abra kind of has a heart-to-heart with him. Like, you can do this. You can fight through this. One of the things you don't realize about Danny Torrance is that he got here 15 minutes earlier. And he turned on the rule.
What's the one rule? Which is
right. Oh yeah, yeah.
Don't
right.
forget the boiler.
Don't forget the boiler.
I mean that's another major thing from the book.
Yeah,
was that they would go on and on about, like, they were like, don't ever forget the boiler, and like that's, you know,
it's bad news.
Yes,
if you do that,
it's one of the reasons why he's there.
So the ghost kind of shakes it off. Like, Danny shakes off the ghost. He's like, you gotta go. Like, you gotta get out of here. I can't hold this thing off for much longer. And of course, Abra runs.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not leaving. He's like, someone's like,
gotta go.
Like, keep them at bay.
Yeah, somebody's gotta help people like you, or people like us, basically, is what he's saying. And then the ghosts take control again. Abra gets out, and the whole place explodes. And I will say, at least they didn't have any, like, lawn animals, like, this time around, which is just a weird option in the book. So the whole thing explodes. The police are coming. And we kind of flash forward a little bit further, and we see Abra is okay. Like, she's having a talk with Danny. And we know that Danny's not there. Like, he's kind of said, you know, you did a good job. Like, everybody's okay.
It plays very much like the scenes with Dick. So you get that idea.
Right. There's also, if you go back and watch those scenes, there's like a weird reverb to their voices. Mm-hmm. That's how you know they're dead. Is there's like a, just
like the aliens in V.
Exactly. Yeah. So her mom comes in and she's like, who are you talking to? And she's like, nobody.
Nobody.
And then of course,
and that's when it does the same cut that it did for Dick.
Right.
Which is why I also think Dick is dead. That,
they show,
you know,
that again. Yeah.
They cut the same way. Cuts to the
makes
parents'
sense.
Point of view. And,
yeah.
And Danny's gone.
And I mean, to the same extent, I took it as they're not there. It could mean anything.
Right.
They're talking to them. They're dead. But I definitely could see that.
So then she comes out of Abra comes out and she's like, no, you know what? I was talking to Danny and he said the dad's okay.
Yeah. She's not going to hide it from her mom anymore.
Right. And then she's like, all right, well, come on downstairs for dinner. And she kind of looks in the bathroom and the curtain pulls back.
Yeah.
Identical scene to when Dan traps the
right. She walks into the bathroom and
closes the door just like Dan.
But we should say that there is that very touching scene because Danny, they say that in the past that Danny hasn't talked since they came back from Colorado. She's sitting down there with, it's a flashback to, it's Wendy and Danny sitting there watching cartoons. Danny gets up to go to the bathroom, sees the woman, and without hesitation goes in there and closes the door behind him and locks. That's when we know that he started to lock the
he's
things
trapping
in the box.
Them. Yeah.
And so we get that exact same scene here, and that's kind of how it ends. And I loved this movie.
I thought it was really good. I thought the first hour is a little slow.
Yeah.
But I thought the payoff was totally worth it. I loved all the Overlook stuff. Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson was so good.
She's
as Rose
great.
The Hat.
Yeah.
She just has this, like, you're just mesmerized by her. A lot of it, I mean, you know, accent thing aside, but it's her delivery of the lines and also her body language.
Right.
The way she moves, just
they're dancerly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's her movement, and I thought she was a great,
in a weird, graceful.
And, yeah,
yeah.
I like this movie a lot. I thought this was a very good sequel, and it's not similar in tone, but it's what happens this character after. And I thought it worked very well.
Yeah.
And again, I liked the changes to the ending. I like them. I like this ending better than I like the ending of the book, even though in the book Danny lives.
Yeah,
I mean
after all he's been through and he's helping people, and the book ends with him getting his, you know, another chip for sobriety. It's like, why kill Danny off? He doesn't need to die.
I mean, I get that, but I also like the fact that but
maybe he wants
there
to.
Were stakes and you know makes
yeah,
them, but
you know.
but
That's the only problem I had, and it didn't ruin it, but I'm like, Danny has so much that he's recovered, he's helping people.
You
like,
hate
why?
To see that when it's all said and done, the Overlook still killed him.
Yeah,
but he killed the Overlook.
Yeah, that's true.
He died killing the Overlook.
And he took out a bunch the top knot. It's called.
And one thing we should probably say for people who haven't read the book, a little spoiler from the book, but in the book, Danny and Abra are related.
Yes, he's actually Uncle Dan.
He's actually her uncle, and I think this guy, because I don't remember this from the movie, but in the book, part of the marital problems between Jack and Wendy were not just his drinking, but that he had an affair with a student. And
if that's the case, and that's crazy that woman looks just like Wendy.
So Abra's mom is Danny's sister. That's the daughter of
Momo that she goes to visit, who's a bigger character in the book
because
she's dying. That's the student Jack Nicholson had an affair with.
Well, that would be crazy that she looks. I mean, there's all we talked about it in the
people have types.
No, totally. Yeah. But I mean, like, even so, Jack's real name, they don't call him Jack in the book.
Yeah.
They call him John. So the "here's Johnny" line is not in the book, right?
No, "here's Johnny" is not.
So it's interesting how that plays.
But he's Jack Torrance. They call him Jack.
His name is John. His full name is.
Jack is an abbreviation.
Right.
Is a nick, but they called him Jack.
But they did. But in the book, like, you never know that his name is John in the movie.
Jack is a common.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's
but they always called him. They called him Jack in the book.
I know. But what I'm saying is, like, when they do the "here," like, when they actually give you his full name,
right,
as John whatever Torrance, and then they do the "here's Johnny" line, I was like, well, that has to be something. You don't, you know.
But Jack is, that's the nickname for John.
John, I
mean,
right.
I know. Yeah, I mean, that's, but anyway, I just thought people would like to know that they're related. And that's part of why the link is so strong.
That's why they're connected. I mean, it's a huge part that they just completely left out. I mean, that's not a small revelation of why they're connected.
Yeah.
Does she ever see Danny? Does the mom ever see Danny in the book?
Momo?
No. His sister.
Well, that's Abra's mom.
Right. Does Abra's mom ever see Danny?
He goes with the doctor to go with both parents.
The dad never dies.
Okay. And they find out that link eventually.
Got it.
But it's a huge one where I was kind of surprised, and I get that it would bog things down for time and everything.
Totally.
But that's a huge part of everything. Dan, she's like, so you really are my Uncle Dan. She calls him Uncle Dan.
Sure.
And then
you find out that he really is. Yeah. Yeah. And like, you also kind of assume that, like, on some level she knew that.
Yeah. Sure. You know, sure, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a shame that this didn't do better.
It was good.
Yeah.
So. It's a great sequel to both.
I think I like this better than chapter two.
I would agree.
Yeah, I would agree.
So. Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And of course, Patreon, patreon.com/RealSpoilers. $5 a month, bonus content, and you help us out.
Yeah.
So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
Ford v. Ferrari.
I bet Christina Ferrari is really excited.
She's super excited. Yeah, Dawn of Cars.
Yeah. So so thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Sonny and Muriel become partners.
If I can borrow a coat to wear, oh, I'd step out in style with my sincere smile and my dancing bear. Outrageous, alarming, courageous, charming. Oh, who would think a boy and bear to be well accepted everywhere?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.